I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. This episode is sponsored by Ecosia, a search engine dedicated to planting trees. When you do internet searches, a certain amount of ad revenue gets generated. And when you use Ecosia, that ad revenue goes toward tree planting in areas that are suffering from deforestation. It's an easy way to make a very real difference in the environment without spending any extra time or money. I just checked the stats, and they're actually pretty impressive. In the 4 months since Ecosia started sponsoring the show, Out There listeners have done enough searches to plant more than 700 trees. To keep that momentum going and plant your first tree, head to ecosia.co/out. Today's episode is a love story. It's also about a question that many of us grapple with at some point in our lives. Is it better to follow your heart or your head? A lot of times when we're faced with difficult decisions, we have a pretty good sense of what we should do. But just as often, there's that other half of us that wants to do the opposite. That little voice that says we should just throw caution to the wind. We realize it's probably a bad idea, going against our own better judgment. And everyone around us also tells us it's a bad idea. They tell us to make rational choices, to consider the consequences, to avoid rushing into things hastily. But what happens when we ignore that advice? On this episode, writer Grace Heens shares the story of a decision she made involving a relationship. It was a choice that seemed like the epitome of bad judgment, but that she went ahead with nonetheless.
Tom and I met at summer camp, which I always thought would be the exact kind of thing I would love telling people later in life. I was 22, fresh out of college, and in that fun and terrifying state of endless possibilities. He was cute in English and slightly younger than me, bounding with energy like a golden retriever puppy. He had the sort of boyish, goofy personality that I clicked with right away, soft and comfortable, like the big sweatshirt he lent me. We were both counselors at this camp in the back roads of Maine, far from anything that could be termed the big city. We would sit on the back porch in the evening, talking about where we came from. We made out in the camp darkroom in the red glow of the safe light, all giddy and nervous about being caught. The summer flew by, all those little moments of excitement and spontaneity and pure fun. Two weeks after camp ended, we met up in California and traveled down the coast. In the back of our minds, we both knew our whirlwind summer romance was coming to an end. He would go back to England to finish school, and I would head to Spain to start my job as a teaching assistant. But I had been trying to forget about our impending separation. On our last day, we window shopped through West Hollywood, and it felt like we barely talked. As soon as I got in the cab, I began to sob, crying my way from LA to Louisville, listening to the songs he had shown me. I feel like I might be the only person ever to cry while listening to Old Thing Back. He called me the next day, moments before he was about to board his flight. In a rush, he asked, "Did I want to be his girlfriend?" For a second, I froze. I didn't know. Did I want that? After all, I had just ended a recent relationship because of distance. But now I said yes, instinctively, and with a feeling of collision, a squeamishness I couldn't quite understand. I closed my laptop and looked around the front room, which had grown dark as we talked, and I felt suddenly very empty. Was this a good idea? Good idea or not, we made it through the next year. I came to England, where he introduced me to pub quizzes, ecstasy, and cream tea. He visited me in Spain, and we climbed the Martian peaks of my island, drinking and laughing and eating handfuls of quelitas. Some nights we would Skype each other while watching a movie, whispering comments as if we were laying in bed together. On other nights we got sad or angry, frustrated at the distance. I think it was spring, or maybe late summer. we somehow decided we would do a trip, a big trip. I was likely the one who suggested it, unsure of my summer plans and eager to spend as much time with him as possible. We would travel across America, hitting as many national parks as we could, and seeing a few friends along the way. I was so excited at the idea of finally getting to show him around my country, nervous about introducing him to my friends and family, alternately ecstatic we would be able to spend a full 2 months together, and concerned that we wouldn't be able to handle it after a year of long distance. But my excitement was tempered by something more sobering. Around the same time we decided to do this trip, we came to a very rational, very adult decision. Tom had said he wanted to spend the next winter doing a ski season in one of the small resort villages of the Swiss Alps. I wasn't quite ready to leave my friends and the life I had built in Mallorca. The year had been difficult for both of us, trying to enjoy new and exciting experiences while missing each other so vividly, holding out for a time when we could be together. I would be out at a bar with my friends or swimming in the tiny coves of western Mallorca and be thinking of him, wishing he could be there, wondering what he was doing and how he was feeling. I've always been a person who thinks way too far ahead, someone who ruminates on each and every possibility with excruciating detail. I would be planning my next trip to visit him in England and start extrapolating far into the future. When could I visit him next? And what about his exam time? Could I see him then? Why didn't he come and see me? Should I be mad he hadn't been to see me as much? Should I surprise him with a visit? Would he be into that? I would fall asleep with my mind whirring, exhausted by the choose-your-own-adventure story it seemed like our relationship had turned into. It was so tiring to be in a long-distance relationship, and that was when we could see each other easily, almost once a month. If he was tucked away in the mountains of the Alps, flights would be expensive, trips infrequent. I imagined the deep ache I would feel, waiting over long stretches to see him and facing the endless frustration of the spotty Wi-Fi that plagues all long-distance relationships. The happiness I felt in our relationship couldn't outweigh the horrible weight that pressed on my chest in his absence. In the end, I don't remember which of us suggested that maybe it was time to call it quits. But we eventually came to an agreement. At the end of the summer, he would go do a ski season in the Alps, and I would go back to my life in Mallorca. We would break up. It was the rational thing to do. We both knew how hard it was, struggling through a long-distance relationship. And then what? Another year miles apart, only to find out we still couldn't live in the same place? The devastation of that was worse to imagine than being apart. I remember distinctly laying on the back of a boat with him on the River X, finalizing this decision. The night before had ended in drunken tears, not for the first or last time. But we were sure. This was the right choice. And yet, we were still going to do this road trip together, across the US. That was also certain. Tom was planning to come to America in the middle of July. As the weeks ticked by, I grew more and more nervous about his arrival. What if it didn't go well, and we realized we just couldn't stand each other for that long? That's the trouble with long distance. All your real interactions are in these short, fun-packed weekends. On the other hand, what if it did go really well? Wouldn't that be kind of worse in a way, to finally have the confirmation that we could in fact last as a couple, that we could spend months together and still not want to murder each other? Thoughts began to sneak into my head. Ideas about following him on his ski season, somehow wrangling a job. I did some casual searching online, telling myself I was just investigating. They were dangerous thoughts. It had been strange telling people about this trip. I'd explained that my boyfriend and I were going to do a 2-month road trip across the US, and then we'd break up. Their eyebrows would raise in a quick and undisguised look of disapproval. I thought I could tell what was on the tip of their tongues. Don't you realize that this is a mistake? You shouldn't go on a big, long trip with someone if you're going to break up with them at the end. Or maybe it was possible I was reading on their faces the same thoughts that had been in the back of my mind all this time. The fear that I had made an irrational, spur-of-the-moment decision that I would soon come to regret. Mm-hmm.
It's Willow. We'll get back to Grace's story in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Manjal Shah is the company's CEO. He says people who care about their own health and do things like exercising regularly tend to live longer and therefore deserve to pay less for life insurance. So I had to ask,
what if someone cares, but they have some sort of physical ailment or disability that prevents them from being active? Like, could they still, like, does that still count if they?
Well, by the way, most of being health conscious is really diet. You can get a lot of the gains of health by really cleaning up your diet. But also, our pricing isn't designed to just give the lowest rate to the healthiest people. We believe that the healthy health conscious should get better rates, but we also believe the unhealthy health conscious should get better rates.
In other words, if you were born with a congenital disease that wasn't your fault, but you eat a really healthy diet, you can still qualify for lower insurance rates. Same goes for well-managed diabetics. It's all about doing your best with what you're given. To learn more and find out if you qualify, head over to healthiq.com/out there. That's healthiq.com/out there. Support also comes from Kind, makers of snacks that are designed to be tasty and healthy. You've probably seen Kind bars at your local grocery store, but instead of buying them one by one, you can get them delivered straight to your house on a regular basis. The Kind Snack Club gives you monthly shipments of your favorite snacks at a discount. And because you're listening to this podcast, we have a deal for you. You can try 10 different Kind bars for free. All you have to do is pay shipping. After that, assuming you stick with the Snack Club, you can choose which snacks you want and get them at a discount delivered right to your door each month. To get the free sample box, just go to kindsnacks.com/out there. That's kindsnacks.com/out there. And as always, we have links to all of our sponsors on our website. And now, back to the story.
By the time Tom arrived in mid-July, it was a relief just to have him there. It was finally starting, however it might turn out. The plan for our trip was fairly extensive. Starting from Louisville, we would travel in a crooked oval, up through the Midwest, all the way across to California. We'd stop to visit friends and family in San Francisco and LA, then move across the South, back to Kentucky. My anxiety about the intense one-on-one time we were about to have gradually waned as we snaked our way down to Louisville from Massachusetts to start our trip. I remembered how completely at ease I was with Tom, how secure I felt in his affection. But of course I was still scared. I could feel my chest squeeze when I thought about that point when we returned to Louisville. I pushed it from my mind, channeling my energy into booking campsites, looking up hikes and points of interest. By the time we set off for our first destination, St. Louis, we had a roomy four-person tent, a camp stove, and a foolishly insufficient amount of money for the 2 months we were planning to spend on the road. We were totally ready. When I think back on that trip, it's in little vignettes. Stifling giggles, listening to an angry biker unleash an unholy stream of expletives one campsite over, hiking through knee-high water in the narrows at Zion, getting stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic leaving Venice Beach because we had insisted on officially going coast-to-coast, as in all the way to the ocean. On the shores of Lake Tahoe, we sat watching a women's fun run. It was a bizarre place. The beach was this tiny strip of land packed with families, and when you walked into the lake, the water didn't go past your knees for ages. You could walk and walk and walk and still not even be close to waist deep. I remember this day in particular because we had a fight. Tom and I got along great. We were such good friends in so many ways. The same things made us laugh. We both liked made-up games and messing around outside. But in some ways, we were really not alike. Different things mattered to us. Our brains were wired differently. Tom knew more about science than I ever will, but he wouldn't get my references to literature or art. Tom liked to go to music festivals and clubs, whereas I usually found both venues loud and stressful. We would get frustrated about the lack of understanding or interest, and it would reach a boiling point. On this day, we had one of those kinds of fights. I can't remember what it was about anymore, which is probably because it didn't really matter that much. But a small, guilty part of myself felt that maybe this was a good sign. Maybe we weren't a perfect couple after all. Maybe we weren't meant to be together. It was strange, feeling comforted by an argument with him. All the normal rules were reversed. Was it possible my impulsive decision to travel all summer with Tom was a good idea after all? Maybe it would show me that we weren't meant to last anyway. But then, that conclusion was turned on its head. We spent a weekend in California with my brother and his girlfriend, at this remote cabin they had rented. We had a picnic looking at the views. We stayed up late, playing drunken board games and eating sloppy joes. It was so good to see my brother and Tom getting along. It's always a great feeling introducing someone you care about to other people who you care about and watching them click. Yet it made things even more difficult. It's a big step to introduce a partner to your family. Tom had learned a lot about my family when we were both in Europe, and I had met his. He would ask how my younger brother was getting on with cross country. I would inquire about his older brother's master's program. We were invested in each other's families, and the further we got into that, the more painful it was to think about breaking up. Maybe things would be easier if my family disapproved of him, or his family disapproved of me. But then again, that would be terrible too. It was also confusing at this point, standing on a precipice that we had built up ourselves. Where was the rationale in introducing Tom to my family? It felt like yet another rash, emotional decision, one that would just end up making the breakup more painful when it finally happened. Maybe I should have thought this through more. Maybe I shouldn't have gone ahead with this trip just because I really wanted to at the time. A couple days before the end of our trip, we stopped at a little national forest in the southwestern tip of Kentucky. It was called Land Between the Lakes, and it was a stop that we hadn't really planned too much. It was conveniently located on our trip back, and we could camp there, so we added it to the itinerary. Arriving in the dead of night, it wasn't much to look at. But when we woke up the next day, we realized we were right on the shore of a huge, beautiful lake, and also that we were practically alone. There was barely anyone else in the campgrounds. In Colorado, we had gotten some edibles, and it was decided that here was the place to put them to use. What followed was one of my favorite days of the whole summer. We swam in the water, messing around and laughing hysterically. We drove into town and ate these huge servings of pecan pie and ice cream. We tried to go for a hike, but ended up falling asleep at the trailhead, then waking up again and laughing even more hysterically at our own ridiculousness. I felt so close to him that day, so totally happy. The day had underscored everything I loved about Tom, and how we fit together so easily. When we left the next day, I could feel myself getting droopy again. It had seemed so easy earlier that summer. Out on the river in Tom's boat, making smart, rational decisions. But now that it was actually happening, I just felt sad and empty. It's a very hard thing to start missing someone before they're even gone. Everything becomes heightened. Everything is the last time you might do X with them. The last time we would fall asleep next to each other. The last time we would moan about how tired we were of peanut butter sandwiches. By the time we parted ways in the airport, me on my way to sob about him on yet another flight. We had exhausted all the last times. I felt miserable and a little bit stupid. It was my own fault I was this torn up. If we'd broken up when I'd left Europe, I'd probably be totally fine by this point. I felt alone in my unhappiness. Sure, I would get a kind of side-eyed sympathy from people who probably also thought I'd gotten myself into this mess. About a week before we parted ways, Tom and I had ended up at a weekend summer camp for adults, which seems strangely appropriate given how we met. My friend Hannah had gotten free tickets and told us she would meet us there later that evening. We got there late in the afternoon, arriving just as everyone was headed off on a boozy hike. We decided to take our beers and head for the diving platform on the other side of the little pond. It was the golden hour, and the place was totally quiet. We sat side by side and talked for a long time, reflecting on the trip, and most of all, how soon it was ending. It was a bittersweet moment. It felt like we were on the back porch at summer camp again, like we had been the previous summer. Except instead of blossoming, our relationship was coming to a close. It turns out the people who had warned us that this trip would make things harder were right. After growing so close to each other, we didn't manage to make a clean break right away. We found it too hard to let go, and ended up falling back into our old habits, texting each other when something funny or frustrating happened, Skyping at night, even visiting each other twice. There was talk of Tom trying to move to Spain to be with me. We had grown so close over the summer, only to tear ourselves apart again. It felt incredibly unfair, but I had no one to blame but myself. I had to remember why I had decided it was a bad idea to continue our relationship. I told Tom we needed to really cut the cord, officially this time, and he agreed. Tom and I have a very different relationship to each other now. We're no longer as close as we used to be, but that's really how it should be, because we are certainly no longer a couple. But when I think back about the summer I spent with him, I don't regret it at all. Sure, it made things harder on us, and it caused a lot of heartache that could have definitely been avoided. We made one rational choice, and we stuck to it. We broke up, and we were both able to do what we wanted to, neither holding the other one back. But we also made a very irrational choice. We followed our hearts instead of our heads. I spent a whole summer growing close to Tom, relying on him, laughing and crying with him, getting stuck in torrential hail in South Dakota, sleeping in the car in the desert heat of Arizona, playing endless games of gin rummy at sunset. And I'm so glad I had that experience with him. Even if we drifted apart totally, even if I never saw him again, it was important to have that experience. Just because we had to break up didn't make it any less special, and it doesn't diminish it in my mind at all. Sometimes it's worth the pain to have a unique experience with someone you care about, laughing till your stomach hurts in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, and enjoying the moment for what it is.
That was Grace Heens. She's a writer and podcaster from Louisville, Kentucky. Don't go away because I've got a giveaway to tell you about in a moment. But first, I wanted to thank this week's presenting sponsor, Ecosia. Ecosia is a search engine that uses ad revenue from your searches to plant trees. If everyone who listens to this podcast used Ecosia, we would be able to plant more than 250,000 trees over the course of a year. To get started, just head to ecosia.co/out. That's ecosia.co/out. Also, a huge thank you to Bruce Gunsler, Doug Frick, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to the show. If you'd like to make a contribution of your own, head to outtherepodcast.com and click support. Okay, now for the giveaway. One of our goals for this month is to grow our listenership. And to do that, we need your help. We're asking each of you to get 3 people you know to subscribe to the show. This can be on any platform, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, etc. But they do need to hit that subscribe button. Send us an email with the names of the people you got to subscribe, and we'll enter you into a drawing for one of Out There's fabulous new hoodies. These hoodies are super soft, kind of like your favorite t-shirt. They're eco-friendly, made from 60% certified organic cotton, and we've got 3 of them to give away. So, like I said, all you need to do is get 3 people to subscribe and then send us an email with their names. My email address is willow@outtherepodcast.com, and it's on our website as well in case you can't write that down right now. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.